Siren Radio.
Maybe it was viewed as a kind of additional player or something. Maybe not. Okay, it's the Midweek Drive. We're ready to scoot into October because it is October 2018. Who'd have thought it, Bill Coles?
It always comes round after September, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, like clockwork in many ways. Which means we'll be progressing into all wonderful things, including potentially the fallout from the 2008 banking crisis, which, again, could be down to whether or not we can connect via Skype to the author of The Gold Man in the East, and indeed the chief executive officer of Today Makes Tomorrow, that's TMT, not to be confused with TMZ, that would be Nobu Sue. But I know that's all very, all well and good. But ultimately, after last week's shocking plant-bought revelations, you are keen, Bill, to formally welcome the terrific trio of fine folk in the studio now. Your question is to decide who to go to. Kira Alsbrook, Becky Morgan-Phillips, or Alex, well, actually, don't forget me, Ben Lewis. I don't know, sometimes.
You do Alex as well, if you want.
I suppose I need to put myself up for that routine, but why? Why would I? Who do you wish to go to first, Bill Coles?
Kira, please.
No asking about. Straight in there, Kira. Yeah, recognises, obviously, your whole voice of children and all other bits and pieces. Take it away then, Bill. What would you like to chat to her about?
I'm very interested in the moment at in strategy and grand strategy. Lots of people are just lead their lives by tactics. Just constant firefighting. So, Kira, what is your grand strategy? Do you have a plan for what your life's going to be like in 10 years' time?
Yes, kind of, I think. Possibly. Don't know if it will go according to plan, though.
Okay, but you do have a plan. What's the plan?
In terms of career, in terms of life in general, in terms of...
Yeah, the whole lot.
The whole world. Oh, okay. okay, well, in terms of career... this is very, very out there. I would like to work for Disney, being a Disney promotional PR executive, and I'd love to do premieres and, you know, all that kind of thing. But at the same time, I'd like to do a lot of charity work for Save the Children. So in 10 years' time, I would like to have at least travelled a little bit, travelled and worked, you know, with children from different countries and things like that too. And besides that, hopefully everything else would be all good.
Well, that's amazing because I am the godfather to the head of Disney's PR outfit in London. She's got two Ethiopian kids who she's adopted.
You're joking.
These are the kind of things that happen when you get signed up for the
physically joking.
So, yeah, okay. I'll give you a shout at the end and I'll affect the introduction.
You see, step by step. We might even bring them aboard to do an audition with the Midweek Drive. So there we are. It's marvellous stuff there. You've made young Kira very happy there. The citizens of Ilkeston are already sort of parading in a ticker tape fashion to actually say, success, success for Sci-Fied. Such excitement only going to be matched when we actually have our birthday celebrations for William Sitwell tomorrow. I know, Ben. It's just one thing after the other. Who would you wish to go to next then, Bill?
Go to Becky, please.
Hello.
Becky, so what is the grand plan? I mean, most people don't even have a grand plan by the time they're, until they're about 40 or so. But you, maybe you do have a plan.
I wish I was as organised as Kira is, but alas, I am not. So I don't really have a set in stone plan. There are things I want to do. I want to travel. I want to live in another country for a while, experience a different culture. I know that's something I'm striving to do. But in terms of career-wise, I'm not entirely sure what path of PR I'm going to go down just yet. But I'm looking forward to figuring it out here at Lincoln. So, yeah.
Okay. What's the key to PR, by the way?
Oh, gosh.
That's a hard question.
Communication.
You didn't think it was gonna be easy.
Yes, it's...
All right, communication.
No, it's connecting with the people at the end of the day.
Sounds very
okay,
familiar.
But what are the bosses looking for with you?
Pardon?
Endless enthusiasm.
Yes, absolutely. Indeed.
Gotta have that enthusiasm, gotta have that drive, gotta have that dynamo. Which, by process of elimination, Bill, would leave you with young Ben.
Young Ben. How are we doing, Ben?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, William?
Hey, I'm pretty chipper, thank you.
Good, everything well in the
Yeah, it's great. My wife is away for a week and I'm home alone with the children. And my 16-year-old son is having 70-plus people over on Saturday night. What would you recommend?
Oh, that you find a decent pub nearby and vacate the house for the night.
Drown your sorrows.
Have you ever been to a teenage party before? That would be, I think leaving the house would be a bad idea.
Well, it depends how many teenagers are going to be there. I mean, it's... do you reckon you could police it single-handedly, or will you need help from various other parents?
I've asked a few chaps over for supper, and we'll be downstairs, and they'll be screaming and shouting and doing whatever the hell teenagers do upstairs. That's the plan.
Let's hope it goes to plan.
I think leaving them to it would be bad.
Or join them, alternatively.
Yes, I could do that.
Not really a good line either, has been. But having said that, maybe the bar has already been set with the Prime Minister boogieing down at the conference. I mean, if she can strike the Peter Crouch robot moves to an ABBA song, what's not to appreciate?
Exactly.
Yeah, these are the messages.
Did you think that was a good thing for Theresa to have done? I wasn't sure. I saw the dance. I thought, no, I'm bad.
I feel like she tries too hard to be relatable.
Yep, exactly. It was a stretch.
Quite cringy. It was. Yeah. I think she's. Don't get me wrong. She's embraced the dancing aspect of the joke, but I think almost a bit too much. She's taken it a bit too far now, and I think it's almost embarrassing rather than joking. I think it's kind of. I think that she's listening too much to her PR people. Maybe it's part of their strategy, who knows? But it's,
she did that, and that's why she called the election last time round. And look what happened to our PR people, ex-PR people. Yeah, it's problematic in all sorts of ways, really. So, interesting. I mean, I did feel as though that added to her attempted one-woman Edinburgh Perrier Comedy Award attempts at humour, as it were, possibly stretching it, maybe just a tad. But then, having said that, if Boris can run through a field
of wheat,
exactly, that's the politicians we've got.
But that was right for Boris, because Boris is a joke, but Theresa is sort of Maggie Thatcher-like. You never see Maggie Thatcher coming on dancing. Maggie Thatcher didn't even know what a joke was. And I think, it looked fake to me.
Fake joke.
So, yeah, it's all a bit put on. I think it's a...
publicity stunt, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. Like I said, she's trying way too hard. People know who Theresa May is, and suddenly she's doing these things that are like 180 of her character, and it's just making more people more, I think, untrustworthy of her.
It's a bit like your grandma after a few sherries, and you just think, sit back down, it's all right, you don't have to prove yourself to us. It's
Is Alex the same after a few sherries? Or do you feel the same?
I don't say.
Yeah, sometimes you have to maintain dignity. I did think it was potentially embarrassing dad dancing, but if nothing else, at least it does cue this little number.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
Actually, I must remember when I next see Ben for a dissertation meeting, I shall point out where exactly the shark's tooth is in my office, which, of course, I still cherish and treasure from the time you actually visited the University of Lincoln back in the day, William.
Back in the day. It's about time I came back for another visit,
I think so.
Sure, could arrange something.
If when budgets get put together, we'll get that. As I say, we intend to move up to Edinburgh. Speaking of which, Kira, have you ever been to Edinburgh?
Yes, I have, actually.
So,
it's beautiful.
I know you were up at... which part of Scotland last week for the world? 2 weeks ago?
Fife.
So you're well there. But yeah. you have checked out Edinburgh,
yes,
and been to that.
Yes, been quite... since I've been, I think, about literally 3 or 4 years old, we've been going up to Scotland nearly every year.
Whether or not you wanted to.
Yeah, whether or not I wanted to, whether, against my will, so...
Well, clear. So, and what about yourself, Becky? Edinburgh?
Been to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival a couple of times. And... That's pretty much it.
That's it. Have you done Glasgow as well, or is it just a case of Edinburgh is sufficient?
Just Edinburgh.
Glasgow perhaps just a bit too scary. What about yourself, Ben?
Yes, I went a couple of months ago, actually. It was lovely, very much.
You've even gone further north than Harrogate in Yorkshire.
Indeed, which is big for me. It's very big for me.
Giant
a new country entirely.
Honestly, it's just so mega in so many ways. Sport and the media is something we'll be talking about later on in the programme with the wonderful Perry Shakes Drayton. You may not have heard of Perry Shakes Drayton yet, Bill Coles, but you will very soon. Born in East London, and a whole range of wonderful things coming to prominence at the English Schools Championships, where she set a UK junior record time in the 400-metre hurdles. We thank Ben for bringing Perry to the programme. How's that, Ben?
Just a few links from previous work over the summer.
Exactly. So there we are. So Perry will be talking about her PBs and personal bests in 400-metre hurdles, and indeed her medal records, and representing Great Britain in the World Championships. So exciting stuff as far as that's concerned. Bill, you've managed to grill the midweek drivettes extremely well. I think they're all focused on that point of view. The Disney thing will continue ever onwards. We've also got the release of Rod Stewart's latest album as well to think about, because he's still proving that he's got the business. In fact, next week we'll be speaking to one of the chaps who's actually on tour with the Rod Stewart show, Some Guys Have All the Luck. So just teasing ahead. That's, I know. It just gets better and better. Should we entrust this with Kira's yet? Should we entrust it with Becky? No, maybe second shows. Ben, last two questions, please, for William Coles.
William, have you enjoyed your tenophonic limit with us today on the show?
Yes, I've loved it. Thank you so much for asking, Ben.
Brilliant. And will you be joining us again next week?
Just as soon as the boss asks me. Thank you.
We look forward to seeing you then.
It's just pure perfection. Nothing else. Pure perfection. Siren Radio, phoning up to 13 and a half minutes past 5 o'clock on Wednesday, October the 3rd. And we're still breathing.
Andre, ace actress and top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive.
Quite right too. Marvellous stuff. And wow. Wow, wow, and wow again, he might well say, having just worked his way through the first half of the best autobiography ever. And reached the stage where you've left Australia, Annette, and you've actually been in steerage, and you've got to deal with the noise of the ship and the noise of the person underneath you in the bunk and all sorts of other things. And the Lord, thank the Lord, you at least had £10 from your uncle to actually sort of see you through when you got to Italy. Who knows what could have happened?
That was it.
But there we are. I've been sharing the text with the Midweek Drivers in the studio. Ben Lewis, of course, is back from his time at Bentley, so he's delighted to speak to you again.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
And good. Relatively new to the Midweek Drive family, Kira Allsbrook and Becky Morgan Phillips as well. So we're all keenly looking. And indeed, we'll make sure lots of photographs are taken and used on social media to explain the wondrousness of yourself in full force. And, of course, the other classic thing is you end with intermission. It's only the intermission. Yeah. Whoa.
You like that one.
It's got so many wonderful things to actually recommend it, but I'm going to turn to Ben, who's had a quick flick through initially, and already I think was very impressed with the foreword by the late, great Sir Roger Moore. So, Ben, questions for Annette.
Yes, hi, Annette. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. I've just had a nice little read. It's a very touching note from Sir Roger there at the front.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. What was it like working with him, sort of in all the various different programs you did together?
With Roger, I say in the book, really, how much I enjoyed working with Roger. I mean, he was a gentleman. He had a great sense of humour. He was really nice to work with, disciplined, and but there was always a good feeling on the set. You know, sometimes the sets can become very anxious or people don't like each other. That didn't seem to happen on his shows.
Over to the next show, has actually had a little perusal. That's Becky Morgan Phillips. Becky, your thoughts?
I mean, I haven't had quite the same chance as Alex has to read it, but my first impressions are very good. As someone as well accomplished as yourself, producing something like this that's actually a real insight into your life and an insight into sort of a different time for film and television is really interesting to me. What made you decide to come out with this memoir?
Years ago, actually. It's been years in the making, I have to tell you, because I had an awful lot to learn about writing. And thankfully for my husband, who is a writer and has...
Is this your awfully wedded husband, perhaps?
My awful wedded husband,
the awfully wedded husband,
yes.
Marvellous.
He was a strict instructor for me and editor. And through him, I was able to finally get it together. I started out not actually having a clue how to start it, what to do, and what I did do. He looked at it and said, well, throw that one away. So there we
ruthless.
Are.
Absolutely
exactly. I mean, now you know, Ben, when you hand that dissertation, I was like,
you just throw it away.
Throw it away.
Yeah.
Different line. Decades in the making, featuring a cast of thousands, including George Best, Richard Burton, Maurice Chevalier, Kenneth Cope, Joan Crawford, Tony Curtis, Sammy Davis Jr., Cary Grant. And this next chap, actually, which is going to give us a mini musical interlude, because you're back in Britain at the moment, Annette, and obviously
yes,
we'll be back to that. Do you have an audio postcard for us for today?
What I was going to do, I thought, would you like to hear another couple of bits from the book?
We would, but to take us round to that, just before we sort of bridge that, about 65 seconds of a theme which I certainly ran through my mind when I reached this particular part in the text, which is pretty awesome and it's wonderful. It's when actually the lead actor from this particular series walks in and the next line is, it's so-and-so, so-and-so, or is it God? Yes, I think we can recommend it was not Tom Cruise, but it was Peter Graves.
Mission Impossible, wasn't it?
Exactly, the theme, Mission Impossible.
And, great theme, isn't
it? Yeah, wonderful and dynamic in so many ways. And I was also quite pleased to know that Peter Graves himself actually stopped you from drowning as well, which was nice because...
I know, he did. I've been stopped from drowning several times.
No spoilers, but these are the challenging moments that clearly he realised that you were needed for the citizens of Siren Radio and the world to hear the answers. So that's the critical line. Annette, share with us a little excerpt in your own words, in your own dulcet tones from, of course, Where Have I Been All My Life?
OK. Well, more's a pity there wasn't a Me Too movement when this exercise in bad behaviour happened to me. This 1 a.m. in the Beverly Hills Hotel's Polo Lounge set the scene that has since defined Hollywood for me as a land of eternal youth, disguised as a well-polished, graying at the temple's casting couch. In most professions, job interviews take place during normal business hours, but for the actor leading a catch-as-catch-can existence, there are no norms. And so it was that I found myself seated in a plush banquette, a plate of scrambled eggs and smoked salmon between me and a famous film director. His assistant had called to say that this late hour was the only time he could see me before leaving for New York in the morning. He'd been in casting sessions all day and evening, but was interested in meeting me for his new film. If I had any doubts about his sincerity, they were somewhat diluted by his bringing a script of the film and placing it in front of me while he described in detail its plot and the character I might play. He was a charming man, surprisingly modest and disarmingly proud of his two college-age children. By the time my nocturnal breakfast dishes were cleared, it was 2:30 a.m., and I was feeling hopeful that I'd given a good enough account of myself to win a shot at testing for the role. He glanced casually at his watch. "So, what are your plans for the rest of the night?" "What rest of the night?" I laughed. "It's almost daylight." "Exactly. No reason to trek home when my suite's two floors up." His hand was on the script before I'd recovered from the ambush. He'd no doubt played out this charade many times before, yet he managed to make it seem fresh and unrehearsed. I was barely out of the banquette when I heard him say without rancor, "It was a pleasure meeting you." Is it just my imagination, or was that farewell a bit like a hitman assuring his victim, nothing personal? And then...
I mean, that's already, I'm just gripped, Annette. I mean, just, you know, just from that, I can see Arthur writing the screenplay, the whole sequence. I mean, here was I thinking, it's clearly a case of when you were a young child acting out all those play acting fantasies and your mother was listening at the door, which I thought was great. You know, prove that the radio is there. It just gets better and better from that point of view. Excellent stuff. So how's it been going? How's your trip to Britain been going so far? I mean, have you had any signings as yet, and how have they been going?
Not signings. I've had a couple of interviews, and I'm doing for magazine and things and radio, and I'm doing an interview on Saturday, pre-recorded. It's, what's it called, Westminster Live with Neil Sean. And it's a sort of sit and chat, and he's promoting the book. It's all for promoting the book, and it sounds very relaxed and easy, and it goes out all over the place. It goes out, apparently, on TV and cruise ships.
Much like Siren Radio, really. You know, we've got Westminster Live, Siren Radio, the things just package in those sorts of ways. We're duly appreciative for the mention that we get on the inner dust jacket, Annette. That's very good. It's nice to Ben, you've heard a few excerpts there from Annette. We're chatting about how Annette was always your favourite Jeannie Hook.
Definitely. So, I mean, Annette, I mean, it's quite interesting, really. My parents have always watched pretty much the programmes you've starred in. Ever since they were younger. And interestingly, growing up, they watched it again when it appeared on ITV4, although other channels are obviously available. I used to watch it with them. Interestingly, I've watched pretty much most of the stuff you've done over the years. And what I've taken from this, I was going to ask you, which one is your favourite theme tune from... Because there are all a lot of iconic theme tunes with the stuff you've played in. Which one is your favourite?
You know, I think I think it's Randall and Hopkirk. Not because I think they did a wonderful theme for that. It's very recognizable. You hear it. And, of course, the series meant a lot to me, too. But that was one, and I think I worked in The Avengers. I thought that was an excellent one. I just think in those days, it's very hard to choose because, to begin with, I think Britain is far better than America with theme tunes. I think they're much more distinctive. They hold hold it in your memory, and they're interesting. In America, I find them all a little bit samey sometimes, or a bit too loud, or a bit too whatever. But I just think Britain do them very, very well. And in those days, they all came out differently, but they all, I just thought they were wonderful. So I think, yes, just taking me, you know, without being able to listen to them again, I would say that the Randall and Hopkirk and The Avengers comes to mind first. So.
It's very interesting. Yeah. Very.
What did you think? I mean, did you have an idea about that?
Oh, I mean, I agree with you in terms of what you were saying about the theme tunes compared to, you know, the UK and America.
A teeny music bed to help you, Ben, because, of course, it was this moment that we were talking about here.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see it now, can't you?
I think it's very mysterious, which kind of sums up the series, I would say.
Oh, it does. I mean, it gives you that sort of ghostly quality.
Look out,
of
Marty,
course.
They're going to run
you
over.
They're running you over, Marty. But I think for me, though, the Persuaders, or perhaps even The Saint, were one of the best ones for me. But, you know, they're
wonderful.
Definitely. And you know, as you were saying, compared to UK and US theme tunes, I think the UK ones are obviously more iconic because they're still played now, you know, some 40, 50 years later. You still hear them on the radio being used as, you know, little background noises, or on television adverts as well.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
This is something we can follow up with Arthur in a few moments, of course.
Yes, you can.
We might have one or two things to say about theme tunes and so on.
Yes.
Becky, any questions or thoughts from yourself? I mean, clearly, unlike Ben, maybe your parents didn't introduce you to every single thing Annette Andre actually did. I think it should be part of that.
It was pure coincidence, though, I promise.
I mean, my mum would have been roughly the correct age, I think. But she hasn't introduced me anything from that early in her childhood.
That's why DVDs and such like stuff on YouTube are available as well.
Yes, they're available. All of them are available. Even I'm finding ones that I've totally forgotten about.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously looking to track down the Australian TV series and see what happens. But, of course, actually, with that one, I mean, to be edited out on the basis of, I'm sorry, you were engaged in activities which were deemed to be too salacious for the Australian and American audiences, but were okay for Britain. Interesting.
I know. Isn't that weird? Yeah, and I've never seen that one that was shown in Britain. I'd love to try and get hold of it. Because obviously I appeared in it, because the rest of it, the other ones, I landed on the floor.
Yeah. Well, you know, cutting room floor, sometimes it happens. I mean, I do think for any budding actors, any jobbing career folk in any way, shape or form, you address so many key things, including, it has to be said, some interesting perspectives on religion. Interestingly enough, two nuns actually provided an inspiration to Annette, even though, as far as the organised religion is concerned, just don't go there. Just don't go there.
Isn't that strange? Isn't that strange? Two of them, yes. I remember them with great affection. I really do.
Well, there you are, you see. Even The Sound of Music had positivity about it.
I'm not sure.
Kira, thoughts from yourself?
Well, hi, Annette.
Hi.
Basically, I've just been skimming through your book whilst we've been talking, and one of the questions I do want to ask you is, most importantly, what was it actually like working with Sir Roger Moore?
He was one of my favourite actors. He really was. Because, to begin with, in the very first episode I ever did with him, which was terrifying because I'd never done anything like that before and I'd never met him before, and I had a terrible director who screamed and shouted at me. And Roger just took hold of the situation and made it as pleasurable and calm for me as possible. And that got rid of my nerves. And the many times I worked with him, he always had something I could learn about, because he was a master at handling things like a series. It's not easy to handle a series. And he was wonderful with me in that he instructed me when I do Randall and Hopcote Deceased, which was my own series, as how to handle a whole series, because it's tough. And if you read the book at all, you'll see how all of that went. But he was very instructive, and on top of that, he had the best sense of humor, and anybody who can make me laugh is way up there, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
It's important to have a sense of humour.
Yeah.
I mean, look at our Prime Minister. Or maybe not. Isn't it nice
maybe
to see?
Not.
Annette, you come back to Britain and instantly Theresa May starts dancing at the Conservative Party conference. I mean, what's not to love? You know, clearly the two things are just balanced.
You know something? I've been here. I have not listened to the news once. And the only thing I know about what's happening is a lot of the brilliantly gory details that's happening in America at the moment is because my loving husband, every time he phones, gives me an update with roars of laughter about all this nonsense and circus.
He's a great husband.
We'll find out in a few moments. He'll be with
you
us across the airwaves. And just in case, Annette, you thought, well, what about my own little personalised ident, such as...
The Midweek Drive on Siren 107.3 FM. A show that enhances, educates, and entertains.
Or as we like to say, enhances, educates, and entertains. Genius.
That sounded quite good, didn't it?
One take, Andre. That was the key thing.
Wow.
She's straight in
very
there.
Rare.
No mercy
about
it. I put it down to all of those routines she'd gone through as a child to sort in betwixt the ballet and betwixt the organisation, the whole thing. It's perfect, perfect training. Annette, did you say you had another little excerpt you wished to share with us?
Have you got the time?
Oh, Ben, do we have the time?
Far too much time for you.
That's exactly. Go.
Okay. During the filming of May Gray, it was like a movie within a movie that night on the high seas, when a loaf of bread, a bottle of milk, and a wedge of cheese saved Richard Harris's life. Sorry, I'll just turn the page. There we are. In an 18th century inn in Somerset, I sat in a makeup chair alongside Richard Harris, running our lines for the first of our scenes together. The Richard that I'd worked with on Heroes of Telemark was not the same man these many years later. Where he'd been distant and moody in his drinking days, now, sober for years, he was warm and outgoing. Not only don't I remember you in that picture, I can barely remember most things from those days, he said ruefully. Then added, but I do miss the glass. At dinner the night before, I watched in horror as Richard took the bottle of Bushmills from the barman and filled a tumbler to the very brim, then held the glass to his lips, inhaling deeply. After a suspenseful moment, his eyes closed in ecstasy. He lowered the glass with nary a ripple to mark the journey. Through the entire shoot of Maigret, Richard duplicated this act of Catholic self-flagellation for the cast and crew, ending with a small smile, acknowledging his audience's whoops and applause. I played Judith Hollenbeck, the wife of a man suddenly gone missing from his Paris home. Richard and I had two extended, highly emotional scenes together, and for the second time in my dozens of roles, the crew applauded at the end of the second scene as I broke into uncontrollable tears. Richard folded me into his arms and, kissing my cheek, said, "You're a heartbreaker." By the way, should you see this film, in my first scene with Richard, listen for a child's voice calling out, "Mommy," from her bedroom in my apartment. Well, that was my 8-year-old daughter's voice, added later in a dubbing session, which earned her £100, but didn't ignite the spark for her to follow in her mother's footsteps. The storm broke on the fifth day we were filming aboard the Black Prince, a large cruise ship sailing between the Canary Islands off the west coast of Africa. The captain had warned the cast and crew that the weather reports were pointing to record-breaking waves and torrential rain. He ordered that we get in as much shooting as possible before nightfall, when the storm was due to strike and no filming would be allowed. Arthur was a whirlwind of activity, rescheduling scenes with Richard, Ian Ogilvy, Victoria Tennant, Patrick O'Neill, and Barbara Shelley to accommodate the approaching storm. With mountainous waves already heaving the ship about in sick-making plunges, Arthur and I fell into an uneasy sleep before 10 p.m. About 2 a.m., he became aware of a scraping sound at the door to our cabin. The ship was pitching about wildly, but he managed to open the door to find Richard lying outside, his face deathly pale and almost incoherent. I helped get him into the room and onto the bed. "What's wrong, Richard?" Arthur asked. In a hoarse whisper, he said, "Need milk, cheese, bread." His eyelids fluttered, and then he seemed to lapse into a coma-like sleep. Arthur picked up the phone and dialed the doctor's cabin number. He let it ring a dozen times, then hung up. "He's got hypoglycemia, low blood sugar. There's no time to hunt down the doctor. I'll get him what he needs in the kitchen. Try and keep him awake," he told me, and pulling on his robe, stumbled out into the companionway. He found the watch officer on the bridge. The two of them raced down to the kitchen, the officer unlocking the refrigerator and filling a bag with a bottle of milk, cheese, and bread. By the time Arthur came back to the cabin, I'd managed to keep Richard awake enough to get some of the food into him. It took about 10 minutes for color to come back into his face. The doctor, a small, flustered man, bustled into the cabin and, making an obviously ridiculous excuse for not being in his cabin, began to attend to Richard. "It's a testament to my profession that whether by the process of natural selection or dumb stubbornness, actors seem to have more lives than cats. Richard, with a dangerous chronic condition as a result of years of monumental drinking that had just almost done him in, was on his feet and shooting a chase scene in the engine room the next day." And that's that one.
And strangely significant for Stoptober, in which we're obviously looking for a sober October. So there we are, health message as well. I mean, genius, you know, just working through that. Annette, it's been awesome. Ben, last two questions, please.
Annette, have you enjoyed your 10 o'clock Olympus today on the show?
Oh, I always do. And thank you for your questions and your participation.
No, thank you. And will you be joining us again sometime in the near future, hopefully?
Yes, but I think probably not till the new year because I'm here for a while.
Clearly, we'll have to squeeze in another sort of London location connection on some basis then, because we can't leave the fans without that whole routine. Besides, don't forget the memoir of Annette André, "Where Have I Been All My Life?" is available now. Go and purchase it. Your life will never again be the same. And Annette, we will speak again very soon. Take care now. Keep on keeping on.
Thank you. Bye.
Forest girl, it ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Between the parted pages, and were pressed in love's hot fevered iron like a striped pair of pants. This park is melting in the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again. I recall the yellow cotton dress foaming like a wave on the ground around your knees. The birds like tender babies in your hands, and the old man playing checkers by the trees. This park is melting in the dark, all the sweet green ice flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have the recipe again.
sing it. There would be another dream for me. Someone will bring it. I will drink the wine while it is warm and never let you catch me looking at the sun. And after all the loves of my life, after all the loves of my life, you'll still be the one. I will take my life into my hands and I will use it. I will win in their eyes, and I will lose you. I will have the things that I desire, and my passion flow like rivers to the sky. And after all the loves of my life, oh, after all.
Some more Weingarten Wonderment on the Midweek Drive.
Quite right, too. Weingarten Wonderment from, of course, the awfully wedded husband. Arthur Weingarten, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir? How's San Diego?
I'm well, thank you. I'm well.
I thought I'd play the expanded MacArthur Park version by the late Richard Harris there, because it was a lovely way of actually connecting Annette's little excerpt from Where Have I Been All My Life to your good self, really, in terms of your producer roles, etc. And clearly, if he hadn't given up the alcohol, it would have done him in the end. Richard, are you listening up there? Anyway, he probably had a good time. Always got the feeling that Richard Harris was a chap who enjoyed life, Arthur. Would you say that was a fair statement?
Well, yes, but, you know, I knew Burton almost as well as I did Richard.
Right.
In the 60s, we found ourselves with the same agent, and we had Dennis Selinger for 25 or more years, yes. All of us. And so we were together a lot. And what I found really interesting was that Richard, unlike Burton, who was a Welshman not professionally, Richard was a professional Irishman. And he danced between the Irish myth of being a brawler and all of that with one of the most artistic and sensitive hearts that I ever met. And he was in conflict. He was constantly in conflict.
Yeah. Well, as he said in Camelot, how to handle a woman. You can't. You get arrested. Yeah. Hashtag me too. Sorry. don't go there. That's important. More. Let's look at the images we've actually just put online of the Madrid drivers reading. There we are, Ben and Kirsty and Becky, actually clearly committed to Annette Andre's wonderful text there. So there, I've tagged you in, Ben, because
lovely.
I thought you'd appreciate that.
I do appreciate that.
One of the themes that emerged from our chat with Annette, and there are so many, of course, is that of theme tunes. And Ben, you had an interesting line here in terms of favourite theme tunes and so on. And that British theme tunes were more memorable than American theme tunes.
That was Annette's line, and I just joined in after. But yeah,
being polite, of course.
I don't know if from your perspective, Arthur, obviously being American, I don't know if that was the same kind of thought you had as well. Whether theme tunes were always more memorable in the UK than the US.
Hands down, but I mean, it isn't in the same universe. Here, it's like Meccano Man did it. It's unmemorable and all of that over there. And I don't know why. I don't know why that is, but each one is truly fitted to the show itself. And that can be, oh, well, you look at the show and then you hear the music. But having done enough shows in the UK where I gave the composer a script, not anything to look at more than the words on paper, and what came back more often than not first time out was something that I said, yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. Whereas in America, you throw your hands up.
And yet, Arthur, there are themes like Hawaii Five-O, and dare I say it, the Wild Wild West, and The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and even Wonder Woman, which I think have got a certain memorable quality to them.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. But I'm talking in the aggregate. I'm not talking about, you know, the devils in the details yet. But I would say in the aggregate, or just the same. Listen, I'm prejudiced. I love England, and I'm an American who is an Anglophile with, you know, my eyes wide open. I mean, there are all the problems there as we have here. But
we've got
dancing
prime ministers over here. Donald Trump hasn't started dancing as yet. But there
right,
we are.
Right. No, no, he's not that stupid.
Oh, that's a heavy political point there, Arthur.
He knows, he might have a point.
Right. No, she's, I must say, she's mindless. She's absolutely my. I mean, this man is malice aforethought. He's a living cancer. But this woman is mindless. You know, she.
Well, that's nice to actually, in terms of our political sort of routine, we've got a mindless soul and we've got malice aforethought as well. It's genius, you know. It's
the choice is never great, though, is it? Let's be honest.
We get the politicians we deserve. Arthur, as I've said, 100 years ago, people Ben's age were being shot at in World War I. We'll find out about that next week with Phil Hamlin Williams. It's true.
It's very true. It is true.
You may
it
laugh. You may laugh, Kira, but you know.
Yeah,
that's
just how you come out with it.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those juxtaposition routines as the time approaches 9 minutes to 6 o'clock here in Lincoln, England. You have done a bit of research, I believe, Becky, into Arthur, hence the reason you thought, oh, Weingarten, same name as Annette. Annette Andre Weingarten, Arthur Weingarten. Yeah. So what would you like to quiz him about?
And
Becky's from South London, Arthur, so you've got to sort of have a certain amount of, you know, who knows what could happen, really, in this particular case.
Right.
I suppose the burning question I have is, what was your favourite project ever to ever work on?
Oh, it's a thing that never happened called A Ring That Looked Like a Ruby. It's a line from Trial by Jury, Gilbert and Sullivan. It's a project that I started on radio. I did for several years here in New York City, living in New York City, on National Public Radio, a Gilbert and Sullivan show with a wonderful Englishman who was part of the Doyley Cart Company its original. He was in his 80s when I did the show with him, and his mind was so sharp, he remembered everything. And I was commissioned by Columbia to do a film on Gilbert and Sullivan. They thought the time was right for that. And so I did this thing called The Ring That Looked Like a Ruby. Well, by the time it was done, you had everyone at Columbia and elsewhere where they were bringing it saying, why don't we have the Beatles do it? Why don't we have... I threw my hands up. I walked away. I said, here, take your money back and goodbye. And that was it.
I can see the principle was a lot of, Arthur, it may not have happened yet. You know, who knows what could happen? Always just around the corner. There's always the unexpected nature of the universe. Who knows what could happen?
You bet.
As we said, had Peter Graves not actually saved Annette from drowning back in the Australian TV days, we would not have been connecting with you today. So there we are. It's just a marvellous thing.
That was truly not a joke, she said, because the weight of the dress was so horrific, she said, that she thought that time she truly had bought it. You know, water and a net really don't mix well.
It's not great when you actually when you're asked, can you swim? And she says, yes, as all actors would do. You know, can you ride a horse?
Well,
yes, of course.
Never
you know?
No. Yeah, she never said no. You know, we had an actress, a wonderful neophyte young girl in the Richard Harris May Gray who played the daughter of these rich people that were at the heart of the story. And there was we shot it in Somerset at a wonderful inn, and it was for the manor house. We asked her, can you ride? Because we have a sequence in there. Oh, absolutely. Well, she'd never been on a horse in her life. By the time we were done, Annette was giving her lessons how to position herself in the saddle, and then we had a stunt woman do it and then cut back to her. But she was terrified of horses, this poor girl. But typical of acting, and you can't blame them, you know.
Well, the work is offered. The work is offered. You've got opportunity
exactly.
there. You're not going to turn it down just on the basis of maybe having
a
challenge.
You got it. The word is yes. That's it.
And it opens up so many things. Kira, any questions from yourself? Because I'm not sure whether Arthur will ever been to Ilkeston or Derby. It's a charming part of the country.
Probably
not. You never know. Anyway.
Actually, I do.
I have been to Derby several times.
There you are, you so see. He's taken that line and battered it straight back to you.
Yes, actually. Hi, Arthur. I've been doing...
Hello.
I've been doing, a little bit of reading. I've actually written down a question, and I'm not prepared, about your book that you wrote called The Sky is Falling.
Currently being held in the Snart family for ransom, basically, somewhere just outside Peterborough. It'll come back one day. I'm going to do it as a swap. I'm going to actually provide them with a copy of Annette's, and then maybe we'll get your book back. It's amazing, really. Anyway.
which was, of course, all based on a visit to New York City with your father. And the novel itself being, what I've read of is, quite gripping and emotional. What actually made you, want to write about the experience, what you witnessed? What actually made you want to, research further and write a novel about it?
Well, I think I said it, I can't remember if I did or not, but I think I said it in the foreword. I had nightmares. For many years after, of standing, I was 10 years old, standing looking up at the Empire State Building and seeing this liquid fuel running down the sides of the building and parts of the plane lying on the ground and wounded people being taken out. And I had these nightmares. And the way it came about was I was doing A Man from U.N.C.L.E. at MGM. And at lunch, someone said to me one day, someone told me they saw in the New York Times a story years ago in which you were interviewed as a young boy, that you were at the Empire State Building. I said, yes, I remember that, and they interviewed your father. And he said, why don't you do a book? Why don't you do that? And it suddenly dawned on me that why didn't I do a book? Maybe I could resolve something, because these truly were nightmares. This isn't a cinematic kind of thing. I really would wake up very, very sweaty and frightened.
And the spooky thing is,
I did the book.
Yeah,
I did the book, and the nightmares continued. This is in my adult years. They were on and off. They weren't every night, but several times a month. But the nightmares continued for about another year or so, and then they ended, and that was it.
The interesting thing, of course, being that
was why
it was very much a precursor. I mean, as I said, Arthur, the first time I read it, it was almost as though it prefigured the 9/11 tragedy by literally 30-40 years.
Exactly. And the strangest thing, there's life after death, no doubt, every which way, I believe. I get phone calls from people all over the world. To this last week, I had one woman from calling me from Paris, an American woman, but who had lived in Paris since teenage years, and she was now in her 70s, saying that she had just come upon the book in a friend's house. She saw it in the library. She was there that day as a very young girl. Her mother was taking her to a big department store, Lord & Taylor, which was directly across the street from the building on Fifth Avenue. And I get people calling from all over the world. It's like some sort of magnet that draws people to an event that happened like that. And it is a seminal event. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, the bridge over the River Kwai, why those people to build that, and then the bridge of San Luis Rey, how do lives intersect who never should in reality meet. So, you know, it has all that drama. And
one of these days it'll make an epic motion picture, Arthur. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to work on that. Work together.
Certainly, I have to tell you how many times I think I've said I've dined out on the royalties that I've had from the book.
It'll happen.
But I made more money from options. I have made literally much more money from film options.
It's just one of those strange and bizarre things. Arthur?
Yes, yes.
I'm going to ask Ben to put those last two questions to you because, shockingly, Annette said there might be a gap until the new year before she would actually connect with us again. We thought, was it something we said? No, she's still over in Britain. We'll connect with her. But anyway, go please, Ben.
Arthur, have you enjoyed your telephonic meeting with us today on the show?
I certainly have. I certainly have. All of you have been high spirits and well taken.
Oh, wonderful. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And will you be joining us again sometime in the near future, hopefully?
I will. I certainly will.
I think we'll do a piece before Thanksgiving. That's the important thing. It'll be a pre-Thanksgiving piece. And whilst we're thinking about specialised themes, obviously Edwin Astley responsible for Randall and Hopkirk. Meanwhile, John Barry covered this. Assuming all works well with these wonderful telecommunications, we're delighted to welcome now to the programme a gentleman who grew up on the docks of Taiwan and Japan, sailed between both countries on his father's banana boat, learnt the shipping business from his father, and then took on the reins of Today Makes Tomorrow, turning a small marine transportation company into a multi-billion dollar global enterprise. It is the fabulous Nobu Su. How are you, Nobu?
How are you, sir?
Excellent. We can connect and we can even see you. It's very rare that we actually see people in person. You probably won't be able to see us, but then that's the magic of radio. It's good to connect with your good self. Nobu, let's move straight to this particular aspect, because 2008, in many cases, it was when our midweek drivettes in the studio were in their junior schools. So it's 9 or 10 years ago. It still has a resonance. This credit crunch that kind of impacted on the global market, which many people said, how did it actually happen? From your own perspective, just talk us through how you were one of the victims of, basically, greedy banks.
Yes. The financial crisis was 2008 September, but actually there were the symptoms of the financial systems, the issues 2 or 3 years before. So a lot of houses are unsold and prices nobody buy, and the huge debt and the banks had the lot of the toxic assets on their loans. Their packages sold, and also the credit among the heavy banks. It's like a music chairs. So in 2007, May, we became the first business relation with RBS, and they just came in to my office and they signed a document, said let's open an account. So I thought it's just have the normal account. I signed the account document. That was my beginning of the nightmare.
Now, again, as you say, just the beginning of the nightmare from that point of view. I mean, you've been investigating this for 10 years. You've written The Gold Man from the East from that point of view. That's the first in a series of books that happens from this. And I think it's to your credit that actually you've announced that you're not going to stop this campaign until A, your funds are returned, and also those that you have actually found as being guilty of fraud and dishonest behaviour are forced to repay their debt to British society. I mean, that sounds very much like a crusade, which is fantastic. But clearly, yes, from that point of view, are there days when you think, I can't take this anymore? I mean, Fred Goodwin, obviously, he's had his knighthood removed. We're looking at all sorts of other shenanigans and things going on from that. I sense there's a real passion here in terms of why you're looking to kind of address this issue.
Yes, because after the financial crisis in 2008 November, there was a quantitative easing, and they didn't tell that how much they actually going to pump in. But actually, the last 8 years, over the $70 to $80 trillion was pumped into the system. So the crisis of billions became trillions. So start the reverse engineering, it became clear that I was on top of this accounting or the money scandal targeted by the banks, use several accounts to move around the money. And for British societies, I realized that the thousands of victims, they are in the same situations. But the same, most important thing that they are innocent to the accounting system and how the money move around. So I start believe that it became the biggest money move around system during the financial crisis to create the liquidity to save the banks.
Now, this particular aspect, I mean, just some of these numbers are quite eye-watering. It's cost your company nearly $4 billion. It led to Britain's worst post-war recession. You've launched a $12 million lawsuit against J. Morgan Chase. Significant stuff. I mean, if I can bring in my studio co-presenters here, if that's okay, Noba, as I say, coming from a different sort of experience of the whole thing, Ben, thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, good evening, Nobu.
Or good morning.
Or good morning. Yeah, it depends where you're exactly recording from. I've just been looking sort of into it a little bit more, and I was wondering, do you feel like you're the only company affected by this, or do you feel like there are other companies involved or other persons involved that may be affected in a similar way to what you've been?
Yeah, there. I went. I was invited and visited the parliament hearing, etc. I'm only one foreigner, and I realized that it was a similar pattern in that basically small, medium farmers, hotel owners, or construction company who has an asset, and their assets were basically treated wrongly, and the statements was quite wrongly during this period. So that makes me believe that actually, banks didn't want their money. Why you get 1 million or 10 million from them comparing with $1 trillion? So what actually they wanted was the hijacked everybody's account. When the money came in, this money had to go back to the system so that from that window, all money go back to everybody's money. So actually, this victim should ask the British government to ask them to return their monies. Because this is one big case, not each individual different.
Over to yourself, Becky. I mean, again, lots of complex issues there. You're not a finance student, you're a public relations student from that perspective. Thoughts from yourself?
Like you said, your company, Nobu, lost almost $4 billion. What effect did that have on your shipping company, if anything?
I think it had some effect.
I mean, yeah, $4 billion is a lot.
Yes, it's a lot. Because actually, I was a kind of strange character. I want to know what happened. So more and more I heard, and the banks actually tried to destroy the evidences so that I'll never come back. So I started the fight in different fronts. And more information I got, it became very strange cases because the data suggested that they actually wanted to make sure that you are in difficult situation so that they can hijack your account. So during this fight, they keep pushing me and I have to fight so that I eventually lost a lot of money.
Again, it's the challenge of greed. I mean, you may recall the wonderful Gordon Gekko, the fictional character in Wall Street, that greed is good. Actually, it's not. You know, it causes problems, it causes challenges in all sorts of ways. We'll just bring in our third soul here, Kira. Again, thoughts from yourself? I mean, we're talking mega sums here.
Exactly. Hi, Nobu, by the way. From what, you know, what I've just heard, it's atrocious what's happened. And what's actually, you know, changed since you've actually been investigating this and investigating what's happened to your company? What changes have happened?
Are you seeing any progress, Noba, or is it a case of some days you feel as though you're tilting at windmills?
Oh yeah, this looking at the I'm the one as a foreigner the experience such the period of the 10 years of the stagnant period in the UK economies. And I went to Manchester, and outside London, basically people are very, sorry to say, but very, very poor today. And why? Because the money never go to go to them and only stay in the one place. I think this is the reason I start saying, okay, maybe I know what the problem with cancer in British economy, and I should raise this issue at the 10 years after the Lehman shock. And I think people should be aware why they are like this. I think I thought I'm a very rare people to went through all these experiences, and I want to share it with everybody.
You mentioned the Lehman Brothers there, of course. I mean, they still, even the mention can actually cause people to sort of pale in terms of the lines of that. Do we learn? Do we think we're going to go through this again? Because various suggestions have said, yeah, we've got another global crisis just around the corner, etc. Or will the kind of work that you're doing hopefully help prevent that happening in future?
Yes, because now we have a big problem of the mismatch of the wealth, and the many people cannot buy the house, and a lot of people have the loans, and it's a very, very dangerous situation that may cause some crisis happen again. So it's very important to understand the real reason of the cause of financial crisis 10 years ago, and also back to 1997 in Japan and Asia, and how it treated differently. I think the last 20 years of what happened in the economy has to be rewritten. That is how I believe.
And does it also tie in with education? I mean, looking at your book, The Gold Man from the East, that's the first in a series of books that reveals what goes on behind the scenes in boardrooms of large financial institutions. And also, perhaps most importantly, and I appreciate that there might be conspiracy theorists who say, of course, that's exactly what we say. You've got a small connected group of people manipulating the global economy just for their own advantage. Is that part of the challenge that effectively the reason you're doing this interview, the reason you're doing other interviews and so on, you want to kind of raise that educational aspect across?
Yes. My question is very simple. There are famous economists and the professors. They can talk about theories, but that actually, if they don't see the real book of the banks inside, I think they still also, ask themselves, what I said is right or wrong. That this is very interesting, because we are not totally different from Keynes or the Adam Smith, which I believe the most famous economists. And that we are now in a totally different world. And it's not conspiracies. It's just what happened, and I saw it. That's the difference.
Mm, very much that kind of eyewitness account. Noba, it's been fascinating just getting some insight in terms of your own experiences on that. I think I certainly appreciate taking some time out to work with us today and just share some of those thoughts again. Where would you recommend people should go to if they wish to follow this case? Should they follow you on Twitter? Should they connect? Is there a website? Where would you suggest people should actually go if they want to, again, maybe add their own stories to your narrative?
Yes, I'm happy to talk with the many victims and many people who see, because a lot of people are scared to talk about what they see. So because they don't have evidences, I think come to my knob.store or knobsu.net and visit us, and we can contact and find out the truth. And I think it's good for us, because we have to find the right policy makers to elect, because voting is your own right to change this world.
And do you think, actually, just on that point, I mean, we've talked already on the programme about the politicians, and let's face it, many of them have been given fairly damning descriptions. Do you think we're in a world where we have the politicians that we deserve, or is it a case of we need to actually continue working for the best for all?
No, I think this is a totally different world today, so that politician has to study and learn what's the difference since 10 years ago. So we are in a big exam experiment of the world economy, and everyone has to know what happened. Otherwise, if you don't know the cancer, you cannot have the right policy.
Very sage words. Noba, it's been great chatting to you, good self. Hopefully we'll speak again in the very near future and keep us appraised of what's happening. Many thanks. In fact, a round of applause for Noba Sue, please. Raising a whole range of issues there. Take care, and we'll speak again soon. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Watch all the pretty girls looking voguishly hot. Right on time, here come all the dudes. They work the room and validate their cool. Oh yeah, it's not submission, it's just a look in her eye. There's no decision, it's just a look in her eye.
Album Blood Red Roses, recently released, and proving that he's still able to make his own personal best, Rod Stewart, Look in Her Eyes. When you look in the eyes of Perry Shakestraight and you see one thing, you see winner. Winner and winner. Whether it's personal best for 60 metres, 400 metres, 400 metres hurdles, or 400 metres indoor at Gothenburg, Sweden, no less, it's a winner, an awesome winner. Perry Shakestraight, and welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you? Are you there, Perry? Well, there we are. Obviously, a slight teeny challenge there. We will endeavour to get Perry back, because that's only right. You know, we build up the whole sort of thing, connect it in all sorts of ways, and then suddenly the line just doesn't connect. Who would have thought? We get all the way via Skype, and yet you try the athletics. That's the beauty of live radio, of course. It can happen in so many ways. So what should we do? Another musical little smidgen? I think so. We'll take a little touch of Dollar, bearing in mind, obviously, the lawsuits that we're dealing with. Why not?
Touching you, now that you realize I see it in your smile, you wanna be holding me too. So don't try to say the things you feel inside, baby, just hold on tight. If the feeling's right, stay with me and we can share the night. Taking a chance on you.
When the hour slips away, wanna be holding you more. I know that you had to go, but I want you to know, never had this before. So don't try to say the things you feel inside. Baby, just hold on tight. If the feeling is right, stay with me, and we can share the night. Taking a chance on you.
Whatever happened to Therese Bazar and David Van Day? Never mind. Maybe they took part in the World Indoor Championships. No, they didn't. Was it in Istanbul? Was it in Barcelona? Was it Gothenburg? I tell you who did take part in all of those events and come up with a whole range of personal bests. The awesome athlete Perry Shake-Straton, who hopefully second time round is there. Perry, are you with us?
I'm here.
Yay, you see? A slight false start and whoosh, like some kind of whirling dervish, she's sorted through to just crash through the barrier and have another PB. It's brilliant stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't want a disqualification, did we?
Well,
so, no, I've given a second chance.
It did run past my mind. I thought, whoa, you know, sometimes it can be harsh but fair, yeah. But you were there, sorted through. Do some quick introductions to start off with, Perry. In the studio, we have three fabulous folk. We have Kira Olsbrook.
Hello.
And we also have Becky Morgan Phillips.
Hi.
Both of whom are fine level one undergraduate students here at the University of Lincoln and in his third year doing all sorts of things. The gentleman who is indeed kind of responsible for you being here, that's Ben Lewis.
Hey, Perry.
Hi, Ben.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We are. It's all wondrous stuff. So, Perry, share with us. I mean, for those of us who, let's face it, possibly the couch potato life tends to appeal, your kind of lifestyle as an athlete, quite phenomenal. But, of course, you know, your life story, you've had a few challenges along the way in terms of knee injuries and various other bits and pieces.
Yes. I'm a full-time athlete. And, you know, being paid to run, you know, that is my job. But unfortunately, I've suffered a lot of injuries, you know, and it has set me back. I mean, 2013, I picked up an injury at the final of the World Championships. And, you know, everyone was hanging that gold around me before that because I really had a really good year leading up to it. And, you know, I made a comeback in 2016 for the Olympic trials in Rio, but unfortunately I hurt myself during the race, so I was unfortunate to make it there. And then I came back again with my resilient self and made the World Championship team, which was in London, so back where I had my first Olympic Games. And then this year I came back again. We won a silver medal, I must say, though, in the relay, with the 4x4 relay. So that was a great comeback, especially being told you weren't going to come back, Perry. I think you should find a plan B. You know, your athletics career looks like it's done. But no, I'm very determined, came back, helped the girls get a silver medal. And then this year, we've had 2018.
Well, let's face it, Perry, there's only so much dancing on ice you can actually do. And I would have thought, surely dancing on ice is more dangerous than actually running anywhere on the athletics tracks. I mean, who knows what could happen on that show? You know, Lord above.
But, I hear you, and a lot of people were like, what is she doing? But I was very safe. I think my partner, my skate partner, Hamish, he was very good, you know, kept me very safe. He knew what he was doing. I trusted him. And I actually knew a bit of skating, but not technically. I wasn't sound at all, but you know, I went up for the challenge. I'm always up for a challenge, always up for something to do. To be quite honest with you, I could hurt myself walking down the street, so I went for it.
This is so true. You see, once again, it's like the yin to Nobu Suzuyang in many ways. It's like the positivity. Let's just go for it. What the hey? We break out. Sorry, Nobu, if you're still listening. It's just a joyous time. Let's open it up to the team before we actually do our usual line in terms of how much of Perry Shake-Straton on Wikipedia is actually true. It's a little line we play with most of our debut co-presenters. But Becky, thoughts from yourself?
Hi, Perry. So,
hello.
I just have a couple questions, because obviously you were at a very high point in your career back in 2013. You were world number two in women's hurdles. And then, of course, you suffered that knee injury. I was just wondering how mentally and physically you managed to come back from that. I know you said you're quite resilient, but I suppose it is quite a difference being, I mean, number two and then suddenly not being able to race at all.
I think that's why I kept on going, because I was just getting started. I mean, my career to me was, I was coming to, like, make a name for myself. And it was like, oh, my God, I've been knocked down. I was just so close. I'm coming back, you know. But I didn't know how long it was going to take me. I even made a joke, and I said, oh, I might as well have a baby. And my coach was like, no, it's not going to be
that. That's not a joke. That's giving life to a new life form, Barry. For goodness sakes.
Yeah, I know. But people think that it's not the time, really. But no, like, honestly, when I look at it, I really could have. But you know what? I don't. My mind at the
I don't
time,
think I Jessica Ennis would have said, I'll just have a baby. Sorry, it's just a laugh.
So, no, you know, that was never in my plan. You know, it was just like, I was like, I'm so close, I'm going to keep going. And every small step that I made, I was like, yeah, okay, we're getting closer and closer. I'll get knocked back down. I'll be depressed. I'll be upset. It was a dark time for me. But having my family and friends around me trying to take my mind off of it, that's how I got through it. Just kind of stepping away from athletics. I didn't watch it. That was another thing. I wasn't really connected with the athletics world. I would do media. You know, different things.
Which is why it's interconnecting. Of course, there is another kind of little bond here, because unless I'm way off base here, Becky, obviously a South London girl, I mentioned that yours truly, our broadcasting career started in Dulwich Radio and so on, and Tower Hamlets and Victoria Park Harriers, not in the same sort of locale, unless I'm way off base there. So fair enough in terms of South London and so on.
Again, it's
South London, East London. All right, it's East London as opposed to it's okay.
Yeah. Still London.
Exactly, still London. Yeah. That's the important point. Okay, let's turn to Kira. Thoughts from yourself.
Hi, I'm just curious about one thing. What your fitness routine is.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So nothing
it
too
seems
dramatic.
Intense. But, you know. No, I'm just curious because you hear it so many different types of... Sorry.
It is very full on. I don't struggle with it, and it sounds a bit strange. I don't mind pain. Because to me, that's me working hard. And a lot of people, like when I've done like coaching sessions and my boot camp, people are like, oh, this is hard. And to me, this is easy. But obviously, I've been doing it for like over 16 years.
Perry, are you one of those infuriating souls who uses the phrase no pain, no gain? Because that's the reason I don't sign up for membership at gyms.
Go for it.
I swear by that one. That is me. In rehab, it wasn't a good thing because you shouldn't be feeling pain during rehab. But I was like, oh, I'm going to get through this. You know, I'm feeling a bit of pain. But no, you don't want to be feeling pain during rehab. But no, I do weight sessions. You know, I train four to five times a week. That would include weight sessions, bounding, running sessions, circuit sessions. I've got to do long distance runs certain times of the year. I've got to do speed work. Maybe because I'm a 400 meter runner, I'm a former 400 meter runner. You've got to have a base, an all round base.
Well, I mean, clearly, Ben, thoughts from yourself. I mean, are you a gym working out person? Is there a Ben Lewis fitness routine which says this would make Perry proud?
Unfortunately, nothing quite like that. But I'm back playing squash now at the university, so it's slightly different. Not quite running around a track, but how are you, Perry, anyway? It's been a long time.
I'm good, Ben. I'm very good, thank you. I know we're usually talking cars.
Yeah.
That's another love that I like. We're talking sports today, which is cool.
Exactly. It's a bit different. But I know we've obviously focused on quite a lot lately, but I know you're in the sort of recovery process, coming back into the running sort of aspect. What can we look forward to seeing you perhaps the next year or so?
Okay, so next year we have the World Championships in Qatar in October. So that's what I'm working towards. And on top of that, we have the Olympic Games the following year in Tokyo. So that is why I'm back, you know, going for the rehab. And that's my next goal, to be on the team. So that's...
Well, now you've made it to the midweek drive. To me, it's a done deal. I mean, in essence, you will be our official sort of supported PSD. PSD, not PST. All right, so it's just important. It's not post-traumatic. It's peri-straight straightened. Very important. We're going to go through this Wikipedia thing. We might be joined in, say, via Skype, he says again, via Phil Dearness. If he's listening, he can join in any time, because I know Phil's quite a marathon runner, but he does injure himself every so often, as directors are prone to do on that basis. But Perry, where are you now in the world, Perry? I mean, are you in London at present?
I'm in London. I'm actually in central London at the moment. I'm actually going to an event, actually, about breast cancer awareness month. So I'm dressed in all pink.
Nice.
Sitting outside. It's quite warm outside in central London. Yeah. So I'm heading there.
Well, it's the first Wednesday in October, so why wouldn't you dress in pink and sit outside in central London? It's obviously cutting edge fashion as well. Fantastic. Okay, the questions from the Pedia of Wikis that we actually have here, just to see, are they true or are they just random? Did you, Perry Shake Straighten, first come to prominence at the English Schools Championships, where you set a UK junior record time in the 400 metre hurdles? Is that true or incorrect?
Wait, hold on. The first line I missed. What was that?
Did you set a UK junior record time in the 400 metre hurdles at the English Schools Championships? So a round of applause for that. That's one thing Wikipedia have been correct at from that particular basis. Next question. Did you actually win the 400 metre hurdles at the 2008 Olympic Games GB trials, but then failed to obtain the A grade selection standard?
Yes, I did. What a reminder. Yes.
a line we needed to follow through from that point of view. And the final one, going very well here. Did you, at the 2013 European Athletics Indoor Championships in Gothenburg, go on to win gold in the women's 400 metre final?
Yes, I did.
Yay!
All correct.
There we are, you see. Sometimes you can use Wikipedia as a useful source to open up sort of bits and pieces around that whole thing. Becky, any other questions you'd like to put to the awesome Perry Shakes Drayton?
No, not a question, but just a vote of good luck, really. And I wish you well in your training. And I hope to see you at the World Championships next year. And, of course, in the Olympics in Tokyo 2020.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
We'll be there. And, Ben, any thoughts from yourself?
Yeah. Well, let's have pizza again in Hampton Court Palace.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
This is not some sort of dating agency, Ben. This is a fully professional radio production.
It was very professional.
I'm sure it was. You know, we'll work our way. I mean, here am I. I just sort of go through. Kira, any thoughts from yourself?
Just likewise to Becky, really. Just good luck with everything you do, and you know, stay determined.
She doesn't need luck. Well, she's got skills. She's got all sorts of things, etc. She's got the quality. She's got the determination. She grows through the parrier, through the pain barrier, the parrier, really, the parrier. She goes through that parrier, working through that whole process. In fact, it's an awesome debut on the Midweek Drive. Perry Shake Straighten, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been good for you?
I have indeed. I have enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well then, would you be kind enough to become our kind of unofficial athletics correspondent, maybe in a fortnight or so basis, join us telephonically from where in the world you happen to be?
Yes. Why not?
Well, then, yeah, that's a double round of applause. Yay!
Ladies and gentlemen, standing before you with something important to say. With some trepidation, I crave your attention, but I'm not gonna let anything get in my way. The message is simple, it's straight from my heart, and I know that you've heard it before. But what does it matter? We're in it together, and I'm not quitting while people are crying for more. A simple release from their suffering. People want peace. People want peace. Nothing in life is as sad as a lonely soul.
I suspect, just a smidgen influenced by John Lennon and Give Peace a Chance. But that's Paul McCartney a few decades later, with his little anthem from his latest album, Egypt Station. People want peace. That's what we want. Give it to them. Give it to us. Give us Phil Leonis. Phil Leonis wants peace. Don't you, Phil Leonis?
Peace, action, and adventure. That's what I wish all of you.
Exactly. P-A-A. Pa. Just listen to the awesome sounds of Volume 21 of the regular podcast that Phil produces and presents, all about the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, and I'm pleased to report that he has included the delightful sound of Lily Holliman singing in situ in a very emotional piece, which actually is excellent. I mean, compared with my critique last month, different league entirely. But there we are. That's just
you would have. Boy, she channeled, you know, that overweight opera singer that Bono is known to channel when singing for U2 live. She absolutely channeled that today during some song, one of our songs. I have no idea what it was. Well. In fact, I was so distracted by who it was that was sounding that way.
You were clearly, you know, chilling out and preparing for your return to the Midweek Drive.
What a fascinating show today. And, you know, it's interesting, your last guest, not your last guest. You'll have many, many more guests. The guest previous to me, the brilliant athlete, it was interesting because I was reminded, it ties into my morning entirely, because I used to be many, many decades ago a track athlete. I actually
Phil, competed at the- I knew you were a stand-up comedian, but I didn't think you were a track athlete. Whoa.
I competed in Moscow at the Junior Olympics, had the longest winning streak in the world in the mile, and did not win. So that's the end of my athletic career. But the point is that, when I was running, and this is, you know, I was running late '70s into the early '80s, and when I was running track, my sprint coach was an aspiring screenwriter, and he had, been hired by George Lucas's company to write a screenplay about the Tuskegee Airmen. And what was astonishing was at that time in the late 70s, early 80s, I had never heard of the Tuskegee Airmen. I had never heard of these American heroes. It was not taught in our history classes. And indeed, not even with the power behind him of George Lucas could this movie about the
Red
Tails.
Let's just use our usual straw poll. Ben, have you heard of the Tuskegee Airmen?
Unfortunately not, no.
Kira Alsbrook, Tuskegee Airmen?
No, sorry.
And finally, Becky Morgan Phillips, Tuskegee Airmen?
No, not at all.
So these are the African American men that end up integrating the armed services. The first part of America to be officially integrated was the Army. And it was only because of these pilots who it was an entire African American squadron of pilots who were only allowed into the military because Hitler and his propaganda machine were using race relations in this country against us, making us look really bad. And Roosevelt knew that he needed some counter propaganda. So he thought, oh, you know, having a squadron of African Americans serving the cause in ways other than what they were allowed to serve, basically as cleaning boys or waiters or cooks, would do some of that. But they end up actually being the bravest and the best pilots. They end up being the Red Tails who protected at all costs, at risk of their lives, the bombers throughout World War II. And many bomber pilots never even knew that the men protecting them were African American and didn't find out for many years. So it's an incredibly inspiring story, and I learn about it through one of my track coaches, because it wasn't taught here. And we were treated to a presentation. There are a few of these airmen left alive. We were treated to a presentation about them today at the Breakfast Club, because last month the remains of one of them was identified outside Vienna and was able to be brought back to America so that the daughter he never met could lay her father to rest. But it's interesting. I was thinking about my short-lived track career all morning because that's how I came upon these heroes. And here that part of my past is honored by your illustrious guest that was on before me.
Well, there we are, you see, and that and Black History Month as well. It all fits together. Ben?
Indeed it does. It's very interesting. And also about these the Tuskegee airmen. I know they were quite renowned in Europe because they were
you didn't know who they were a few minutes ago.
No,
sorry.
No. No, I didn't recognize them by name, but I've heard several stories with especially with the Bomber Command where they helped invaluable, just like the whole of America really, especially with the airmen and the P-51 Mustangs, things like that that were very prominent in World War II, and the B-52 bombers and things like that.
And they were embraced not only as heroes in Europe, but as citizens of Europe. I mean, it cannot be more overstated the difference between how white people in Europe treated these airmen and how they were treated when they came back to America and they realized that for all their service, nothing had changed in terms of how they were treated.
Directed by Robert Markowitz, there was a TV movie made back in 1995, which also starred Lawrence Fishburne, amongst others. See the joys of.
There's a few stories now, but it is interesting. Like you say, 95, and here Lucas was trying to get. There is a movie called Red Tails, also the movie Mudbound, which was nominated, I think, for a couple of Oscars.
Yeah, but George Lucas has done Star Wars and Indiana Jones. Why would you have any credibility in the Hollywood industry with just those two?
Isn't that amazing? I mean, isn't it amazing though that's it. You think, oh, these people have all this power, and here's this really important tale. What's not inspiring about this? And yet, if it doesn't fit in to the pre-existing business, marketing, and distribution apparatus at the time, it doesn't matter how powerful you are. You're not going to get it made. Which brings me to Nobu. Brings me to the idea of conspiracy. I had to drop it in there, Phil.
I hoped you'd be listening.
You're very kind to always mention that, you know, as I'm working, and it's so challenging. I've never had such challenging work trying to put together Truth Is Out There Part 2. And you mention often the element of ancient mysteries in it, but there is a second thread that's equally as important, which is this concept of there isn't such a thing as conspiracy. There's only business as usual. That when you find out how a business operates, when you find out what their bottom line is, it may be shocking. It may be disturbing, disgusting. It may even seem inhuman, but it's not a conspiracy. It's just how the business operates. You mentioned that Gordon Gekko quote, greed, for lack of a better phrase, is good. And you say, no, it's not. I'm at this point, at this historic juncture, where I say greed, actually, we can deal with. It is the combination of greed and short-sightedness that is destructive. You can, and many people have, proven how to turn people's greed in the direction of good. If people can realize that they can make money by doing the right thing, then you can actually affect change. But it is when people, and sadly, we have no shortage of examples of this, when people are greedy and short-sighted, and that describes the 2008 banking crisis. It describes the politicians, at least in this country, that have stripped away all the protections that were put in place following that crisis, that we have the exact same recipe and warning lights going off again.
as ever, nicely summed up. But let's open it up to the team after a quick name check to Penny Evans, who is listening, which is wonderful. And yes, Paul did send us the... Actually, no, he hasn't sent us the Friends of Fame's Satellite, which we'll be featuring next week. So we'll need to coordinate that. That's just a tease ahead, a trailer. And we'll also be featuring other new music there. But let's turn to... Well, actually, we offered this to Bill Coles at the start of the programme. Let's offer it to Phil Dearness. Phil, who would you like to be communicated with across the airwaves? Would it be Kira? Would it be Becky? Would it be Ben? Who do you wish to go for?
I mean, this is like choosing your favorite child.
But on the plus side,
which is to say that it's very easy because I have no problem playing favorites. No, I don't. I want to embrace whatever wants to come forward. I think the question is, Alex, you can see the twinkle in their eyes, the gleam in their eyes, the fear etched across their features. Who is the most scared to talk to me? And that's the person.
Okay, then, Kira.
Kira.
Hi.
Why do I frighten you, Kira?
You don't. I mean, I've got to admit, your accent is very, very strong. But that doesn't intimidate me.
My what is very strong?
Your accent.
What accent is that?
Very, 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 very broad American.
Well, see, that's interesting because what you are hearing, what you attribute as a broad American accent is a television or a film accent, which is actually the lack of an accent whatsoever. All regional and, cultural inflections were coached out of actors and broadcasters starting at the beginning of the movie studio era, at the beginning of the broadcasting era in this country, so that we would have no discernible geographic location that could be identified with our voices. And I am one of those people that learned how to speak listening
proper
to classic movies and television broadcasts.
So it's fascinating.
So it's fascinating. And when I first started traveling, as perhaps you heard, I was once a young track athlete.
I can't believe that. I'm sorry.
Kira's looking at a photograph of you and myself now, which I shared.
I like
today.
Your bald patch.
Well, when I was young, I used to travel, to track meets all around the country. And when I would go to the South or I would go to Texas or other parts of the West or the Northeast, and I would just, we'd be in a restaurant and the waiter would talk to us and they would look at me and I'd be grinning at them, and they'd wonder why I was smiling, and I'd say, well, I love your accent. And they would all say, I have an accent? Don't I sound exactly like you do? Because in this country, they'd gotten so used to that neutral inflection voice that they thought everybody spoke that way. It's fascinating. And so what's fun is when I do travel to those places now, especially in the South, within 15 minutes, I find myself dropping in to local accents just because it washes over me.
I was just so impressed with the fact that on sharing our six-year friendship memory from 2012, David Fox liked it, Sheila McKenzie liked it, a whole range of other fine folk, including Tessa Snart, Penny Evans, R.W. Sanders. We had thumbs up from Nick Elliott. Wasn't that wonderful? And yet,
embracing everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Phil has
that the photo? Is that the photo of me with Jim Broadbent?
Now, you know what we've said before when you start mentioning the Broadbent words, that you might sort of think in your fantasies, Phil, that there's a connection, but we are two completely separate beings. Okay, that's what I said. Completely separate beings.
I thought you were about to play the sting, the
yeah,
audio.
Yeah, well, you thought wrong. Exactly.
It was not carded up. Okay.
Exactly.
I would like to explain this just about my track years, and then we'll lay it to rest because, of course, it is famously known that Phil Lernis will not run anywhere at any time. If you have to run, it means you did not plan well. So I ran, though, when I was young because I knew I was not going to be a fighter. And so I developed two skills. I became very funny and I learned how to run fast. And that kept me alive during my formative years.
Do you know, the motion picture is taking shape. We just need Arthur to get on the case and you know, co-starring in it, Andre. It'd be awesome.
It'd be one of those comedic runs, you know, where they do slow motion and just starting.
Like the $6 million
man.
Yeah,
exactly.
Before your time, but never mind. I'll still use that line, the $6 million man. Da, 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 da. Look it up on YouTube.
Oh, that.
I've heard it, yeah.
Exactly that. Precisely, Becky. Marvellous. Ben, anything you'd like to add?
Yes, just going back to, well, to stepping back slightly in time with the with the accents that we were just discussing. So obviously in the UK it's called received pronunciation, which is, you know, considered perhaps the Queen's English or sort of you know, I would say, wouldn't say posh accent, but those clearest accents.
You've got your Richard Fitzwilliams, you've got your Ian Lennox. Where do you picture?
Exactly.
Somewhere in between.
So Phil, obviously what you described there with the American accent, that people had to learn a specific sort of broad accent for everyone's understanding, would that then be classed as received pronunciation, or is there a specific area of America that has received pronunciation which would be considered to Americans?
Well, probably the area would be California. However, at the time when this started, California did not have a very large population. It was all transplants from other areas who were having their accents scrubbed away. And that's it. It's not to be understood. It's so that, and this is fascinating. I mean, when you think about the people who started show business, these were often immigrants. They were often people of Jewish descent. They knew great hardship. They knew great animosity directed their way. And one of the things they had in mind was, if you are going to be in the spotlight, no one should be able to know a thing about your origin. They should not be able to identify where you're from. And that way you would have broad appeal across all the land. So it's interesting. What's funny is, when I worked in international distribution, I would go to different film markets like Cannes or Berlin, and buyers would often think that I was English, and I would say, no, I'm American. Do I sound like I have an English accent? And they would say, no, but you enunciate clearly. And so they did not associate enunciating with being American in any way. They thought we were rather marble mouthed as a people, which is true on the business side of things. But I was always struck by how Michael Caine described when he was starting out as acting, right? That wasn't it that all the accents you would hear in movies and television, Alex, was within a certain mile radius of the center of London?
Exactly. That was what Londoners sounded like, don't you know? Either posh people or Dan and Ed doing their own thing.
Exactly.
Shut it. A message, Kira, for you from Penny Evans, our fellow Derbyshire correspondent, actually. She's from Buxton. And she would like to say, Kira, Phil is a pussycat. No, actually, she's wrong. Fuzz Aldrin is a pussycat. Phil is a human being. Sorry, Penny, but, you know, whatever. She also likes to say, conspiracy theories are real. Yes, the politicians created them. Like you said, Phil, business as usual. I know, Phil, you've missed the Penny Evans inserts via the bio, so there we are, rolled out just for yourself. Which leaves us with Becky. Any thoughts about Phil, who is, as Penny will confirm, a pussycat?
You seem lovely, Phil. I do wonder, however, can you tell the difference between mine, Ben, and Kira's accents?
Yeah, or is it just noise? this is
charming.
He's in California. It's been years since he was last over in Britain. Years. He's getting married. Who knows whether we'll ever see him again? I might not go.
I'm not good enough to be. If you mean, could I discern geographically where you are from? No, I don't think I'm geographically aware enough to know what part of the country you might be from, but I can hear that there's a difference in your accents.
Phil, I think the biggest thing you kind of notice, especially in regional accents and dialects around the UK, is the way you pronounce certain words. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you'll often have common links where we all talk very similar, but then there'll be particularly words with A in, such as bath or grass, or if you pronounce it up north, it's grass. Exactly. So, but then, you know, but then sometimes there's one word where there's common kind of conflicts.
Tomato.
Common conflicts around the UK, and that would be scone or scone.
I knew you were
going
to say that.
It's a scone.
It's a scone.
And
you two are from down south. Okay?
It's a scone, yeah.
I'll give you the answer. It's scone.
You're a liar.
No, because apparently that's what the Queen says. So
no,
it's,
you're a
you
liar.
You have to go by the Queen's English.
You see what you've started, Phil Leonis, with this apparently.
I know. It's a civil war within the broadcast booth.
I mean, you know, to go from there effortlessly to the branding which says
Ben Lewis. Probably the best reason to visit Brighton there's ever been.
Still works, doesn't it,
it's
really?
Brilliant.
Not if you think it's pronounced scone, he's not.
We'll be working on a whole new set for forthcoming scenarios. Undoubtedly, we will. Also,
it still kills me that you made me say the word Ben twice in the same sentence. I mean, that might be.
I didn't realize you didn't have a choice.
The best performance I've ever. He writes these. I'm just something pretty for Alex's arm, as evidenced by that photo. Why that makes me qualified to do an audio only show, I have no idea, but that's it. I'm just a pretty face. I do what I'm told.
And of course, the big question is, will he return tomorrow morning when we have Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar, when we also speak to Johnny Ball about the Gibraltarian Book Festival? Stephanie Romaszewski is back with us. Richard Fitzwilliams talks about Crazy Rich Asians and A Simple Favour. We've also got the birthday return of William Sitwell and eggs. It'll be excellent.
Oh, I'm kind of intrigued because because if you've been listening to Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, not a fan of the two movies that he will be discussing.
An interesting discussion point tomorrow morning. Then.
Yeah, there we are. He did say once he got back off the road in October, he may return. Of course, we also had the words that maybe you will also join us tomorrow morning, Becky. Is that correct?
Yes.
So there we are. So Becky will be with us. Emma Street will be with us. Will you be joining us, Kira? Is it okay? So are you insane? That's 8 a.m. in the morning.
Well, partly, yeah. I'm particularly exhausted, but sadly, I'm actually going home tomorrow.
Going home
back to Ilson.
Already?
So, yes.
Was it something we said?
No, absolutely not.
Where is Ilson?
Well, that's the common, see, that's the common term. The proper English term is Ilkeston, which makes it sound probably worse. But it's bang in the middle of the East Midlands, which is between Derby and Nottingham.
Bang in the middle.
Bang
in the middle. You know how I know that it's from the East Midlands? Because you said it's bang in the middle. There
exactly.
You go.
Exactly.
It could be a suitable honeymoon destination. I just rolled it out there. I mean,
Jesus, no, don't even go there.
just
you want to sleep on a park bench for the night? Go ahead.
I don't know if the vernacular means the same thing there that it does here, Alex, but the phrase bang in the middle making you think of a honeymoon disturbs
me. Yeah, I know.
Me.
I thought you'd build up on that, and you did.
It's
as well done,
family,
sir.
It's a family
exactly.
show.
Exactly. It's very true. Thanks to William Coles, Annette Andre, Arthur Weingarten, Nobosu, Perry Shakestraten, and, of course, Becky Morgan-Phillips, Kira Allsbrook, and Ben Lewis, and Phil Leonis, and you, dear listener, and Penny, what the hey, back tomorrow morning for the Madrid Drive Morning Edition. Back next week with a music-themed special with all sorts of other new musical things coming through the whole system. Ben, go on. Might as well maintain the line. Two questions for Monsieur Leonis, track superstar.
Phil Leonis, have you enjoyed your telephone and link with us today?
Oh my goodness, track superstar is going into my bio just to make people wonder what the heck it
your
means.
Your Wikipedia will now be duly updated.
That's fantastic. All right, yes, that just turned a somber occasion into a magical broadcast.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Well, we look forward to another magical broadcast of you again soon, hopefully.
Good. Exactly. Maybe tomorrow.
You know what? I'm going to try to make the morning edition.
Way, this is awesome.
Oh, magicalness.
Awesome. Exactly. That's it then. We're out of here. The movie show is actually up next. Siren Cinema Show, Episode 9 with Patrick Adams. Outstanding. We'll be back tomorrow morning, of course. Thanks to all What should we say, Phil? What's the choice? What should we go out with? I mean, Happy October? I mean, that's a sort of random thing, or do you want a sort of cliche?
Oh, well, it is October, which is, you know, it's my favorite month because it's the month of Halloween. Mm. So if we could close off with Trick or Treat, that would be outstanding.
Okay, we'll do that then after three, even though it is an Americanization. We don't care. A 1, 2, 3, Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat.
South of the equator, navigator, gotta hit the road, gotta hit the road. A deep sea diving round the clock, bikini bottoms, lager tops, I could get used to this. Time flies by.